Okay, let's give a roaring Tulare County welcome for our warm-up speaker, Monty.
My name is Monty. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Monty.
I've done the 12 steps. I still practice some in my life today. I've been sober since December 28, 2006. That's 4,761 days.
Right on.
I would like to tell you that I have a job today that I love. I have people in my life that trust me and care about me. I'm a member of the Chamber of Commerce in the city of Tulare. I'm in the leadership program for the Chamber of Commerce. I've been up to the state capitol. I've talked to the assemblymen up there. I've done some stuff in my life in the last, since I've been free again, that I never even imagined that I could do, man. Life is like, I know exactly what David Luper talked about when he talked about getting rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence. My life, I am having so much fun now. I thought, man, what's going to happen, man? The party's over when I stop drinking, right? You know, I thought it was over. And let me tell you what, I am having more fun now than I ever thought possible. The guy that's the main speaker tonight is a very good friend of mine, Mark. I've known him for years. His dad and my mom and my uncle and stuff were really good friends. And, you know, I believe that alcoholism, it's not prejudice. It'll get you. It doesn't matter who you are. You can be a judge. You can be a teacher. You can be a convict like me. I just told you all the stuff that I'm doing today. You know, you probably wouldn't believe it, but I spent like 16 and a half years in prison. You know, I don't mean to blow your mind, but that's my story. You know, let me tell you what, I had a lot of fun in there. Being crazy, you know, causing havoc. You know, you're supposed to go in there to learn your lesson, right? Well, I went in there and the party didn't stop, man. I learned how to make wine very, very fast. And let me tell you, man, if you don't make it right, you start shitting everywhere. You know what I mean? Like, excuse my friends, but that's the truth. And if you run a really good program, a lot of the COs there would let you, you could get away with it, you know what I mean? But you better be, you know, running the right type of program. They know how it is, man, you know, New Year's and Christmas and all them days. I mean, that's what they do when they're doing their thing, you know, out there in the free world. So what's wrong with a little bit of hooch, you know? You want to act like an idiot, you get treated like an idiot, though. AA has changed my life completely. And like I told you, the stuff that I'm doing today, you know, guys like me, man, don't get sober. We die. Or we spend the rest of our life in prison, you know, or we pickle our brain, you know. And I'm very grateful, man, for people like Jack and Rick and all the old-timers that are here, David Luper, you know, that loved me when I didn't love myself, you know. I'm grateful for people that have given me an opportunity to grow and to be part of the city of Tulare, man. It means something to me today, man. I'm not the nuisance that I used to be. You know, I want to give instead of take. You know, and that's what AA is about, man. You know, it says that we have to give away what was freely given to us. If we don't give it away, we will drink again. That's what it says. I read that. You know, I quit school in like ninth grade, eighth grade, and I don't have the best reading level. But I tell you what, I can read enough that I can get by. I think it says something there. Rarely have seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. It even talks about that they can be a little bit twisted up here, but if you can be a little bit honest, you know, and you want to grow along spiritual lines, there is help for you too. You too can recover. And I'm one of them guys. You know, people like me, I always thought like getting pulled over and stuff was like bad luck, you know, like, you know, and everybody knows my little story, you know, driving a car with no windshield, with goggles, you know, and wondering why I got pulled over, right? Just bad luck, right? No, it's like, you're not supposed to drive a car with goggles and windshield. Now, let me tell you what happened earlier that day. We were drinking Beefeaters and Coors Light, whatever we could get, Yukon Jack, we just mixed it all. And, I was on my way to go do something, man, and my buddy, he was driving, and he drove the car into the back of a tractor with some discs on it, and that's how we shattered the windshield of the car. Well, I needed to go somewhere later that night, so it wasn't dark yet, but I'm going to get there, but I can't drive this car with a completely shattered windshield. So we kicked it out, and that's where the goggles come in, and off I went. You know, and it's like I drove past the sheriff, and I'm like, please don't let him see me. Like I'm invisible. Hey, the car hadn't been tagged in like 10 years. You know what I mean? You don't know the reason why I got pulled over. You know what I mean? But, you know, we laugh about that now, man. That's the insane stuff, man. You know, but so on the way back, I was coming back from Wood Lake. I was living in Goshen. I'm coming back right by the KOA campground. I'm thinking, please don't. In my mind, I'm like, please don't let that sheriff still be there. Man, when I turned that corner and went by the KOA campground, he was still sitting there. He when he seen me go by, he didn't think he seen what he seen. And he was like waiting on me to come. He was hoping I'd come back by. And the good guy that I am, I came back for him. And he pulled me over. I should have went to jail that night. You know, it was one of them breaks that I was given, man. And, you know, he told me that I was the only one that didn't realize that I was ruining my life, man. And I was on my way back to prison for my third time. You know, and well, they say third time's a charm, right? Let me tell you, man, I got sober this third time. You know, there was other people that knew that I was going back to where I was going to. I was like the only one that didn't know it. My family was glad when I went to prison because they really didn't have to worry about me because the state of California takes care of you. You know, they house you, they feed you, they give you everything. The only thing I want to complain about is they just didn't give me enough toilet paper. You know what I mean? I need the toilet paper. And if you go to my house today, trust and believe, there's certain things that I have, man. You open up the one cupboard, there's like 50 rolls of toilet paper in there. You know what I mean? There's bars of soap, man, good soap. You know, these are things that I get to do today, man, because of Alcoholics Anonymous, because of suiting up, showing up, being accountable, being. If I tell you I'm going to do something, I do it, man. I'm one of them guys that, you know, my family thought that I would probably end up getting a life sentence or getting killed because I keep my mouth shut. And I'll do time for you, man. You know, because I'm one of them old school guys that's just how it is, man. You keep your mouth shut, you don't, you know, and you know, I was put in some situations where I had to keep my mouth shut and I did time for somebody. It wasn't my stuff, but if I had to do it over again, I'd do the exact same thing I did. I would do the time, man. You know, because that's just the way I was raised. You know, today I'll tell you that I'm a little bit different. You know, you break in my house, I'm calling the cops, man. You steal my car, you're going to jail. If I don't, you better hope I don't catch you first, because I'm probably going to go to jail, you know what I mean? But, you know, I'm a law-abiding citizen today, man. I really don't even want to jaywalk, to be honest with you. I like to obey the law today. The Tulare PD, I'm friends with some of them. I'm in this leadership program, and I have been learning so much about the city of Tulare, how it functions, and, you know, like, I spent like 6.5 years in prison. That's like 6,100 some days. My buddy calls me like the so many million dollar man or whatever they spent on me to house me. You know, they spent a lot of money, man, trying to fix me. You know, but you can't fix them if they don't want to be fixed. You know, that's the bottom line, man. You got to want to be sober. You got to want to have a better life. And like, I get to do H&I today. You know, I go to 3 different penitentiaries, man. I go to Corcoran. Let's get that clear. SATF is not Corcoran Prison. It's SATF Prison. And then Corcoran is Corcoran. Okay, they get me confused. Like, that, not me, I'm not confused, but people that talk, oh, Corcoran 2, there ain't no Corcoran 2. There's SATF. You know, it's SATF State Prison. That's what it's called. And I get to go to SATF, I get to go to Corcoran, and I get to go to Avenal State Prison. And I have a brown card for SATF Prison. I'm in the process of getting a brown card status at Avenal. That's where I get to escort myself, man. I'm trusted today. And I am very, very honest in my life. You know, I don't want to go back there. But I will go there to tell my story, to let some of these knuckleheads like me know that if you want to get out and you want to have a life, then you've got to change some stuff. I would suggest that you go to AA. I would suggest that you work the 12 steps with a sponsor that knows he's your sponsor, right? You know what I mean? Because a lot of people say they got a sponsor. I got a couple guys that say I'm their sponsor, and I don't even know I'm their sponsor. You know, because they tell drug court that they happen to know me or whatever. You know what I mean? But but whatever works, you know. I mean, I'm just so glad that they kept the doors open for me, man. When I was, very sick. You know, and didn't realize it. I think I might have realized a long time ago that I had a problem with alcohol. You know, because, like, I don't think normal people, like, drink a fifth of tequila their first time and puke everywhere, all the way from 256 all the way to Merlestone Chevrolet hanging out the back of a Rancho, and just thinking, I can't wait to do this again. You know what I mean? Had alcohol poisoning. But, I mean, I come from, my Uncle David Lou was an alcoholic. I think that it runs in our family. I know it does. But I'll tell you this, that it my mom was an alcoholic, my Uncle James was an alcoholic, my Uncle Dave was an alcoholic, you know, and them were some of the toughest men I ever met. You know, like David Lucio, man, my Uncle David was very, very strong. And when he told me that another man was strong, maybe stronger than him, I believed him. Because I watched my Uncle David bet $1,000 for one arm wrestling match a few times and win. And then he talked about David saying that he was stronger than him. But I mean, when I looked at him back in, you know, when I was a kid, I mean, these guys were like my heroes, you know, and they're all going away, you know, you know, and I just hope that I can fulfill the destiny that they've all done, and I hope I'm making like my mom proud that died. You know, she died while I was in prison. You know, and you know, she tricked me, man. She was a smart lady. She said, I want you to give me your word. It means something to you, to all you and your homeboys. She like threw that card at me, man. Like, and she had my ears. She says, I want your word that you'll get your life together. And I had to like think about what she asked me. You know, I had to think, like, it's like I'm looking at a life sentence. My bail was $1 million, and you'd have thought I killed somebody or something. I mean, you know, I pulled right over, you know what I mean? But I told her, I'll give you my word, Mom, that when I get out, I'll start when I get out. She says, no, you need to start right now. Right now, son. And I'm like, you want me to quit partying? And she's like, yes. And when I was thinking, when she asked me that, it was like I was thinking, like, I already thought I had my stuff together, you know what I mean? And I'm looking at a life sentence. That's insane thinking, you know? I didn't really think I had a problem. I didn't want to give up what was my comforter, my, you know, alcohol and other substances was my everything. I mean, that's all I can say. It was just my everything. And but I gave my mom my word, and I keep my word, Mom. You know, like I said, man, the life that I have today, I didn't even know that I could have. You know, I didn't even think it was possible. You know, I have a daughter that calls me Dad. You know, the first 3 years out, I was called Monty. And you tell me that don't take a piece of your heart, man, when your own blood, your own child, because she's the only one I got, you know, calls me by my first name, because that's what my friends call me, or, you know, my parents or whatever. I call my parents Mom and Dad. You know, even my dad that was never there, you know, Jack's like my dad. And I love you with all my heart, man. I really do, man. You and Sammy very much. You know, they've helped me tremendously. Not only with work, but they listen to me, man, when I'm having my problems. They've watched me go through so much stuff, you know, and sometimes I just feel like I'm puking all over Jack because, you know, Monty's in all kinds of stuff, man. You know what I mean? Like, relationships, they end so fast, you know, and it's like, you know, I have found one today that is like, I'm staying out of the way, man. You know what I mean? Like, I just want to keep my foot in my mouth so I don't catch on. You know what I mean? And it's like, I'd rather be happy than right. And like, I learned so much stuff from Jack, so much. You know, like, I'm a sponge, man, because it's like my brain's opening up more for some reason here in the last, like 6 months or something, man. Something's been happening. You know, it has to do with prayer and meditation. It has to do with reading my book to the best of my ability. And it has to be, I'm willing. I want to grow. I know that I deserve success, and I know that I deserve to have more, and I know that I'm capable of so much more. I limit myself because the alcohol and the drugs wanted to keep me down here, and they're done, man. It's over. You know what I mean? It's time to grow and get what life's got going on for me. You know, and somebody already paved the path, and they're wanting to share it with me. It's with me. You know what I mean? It's like, man, I'm so grateful. You know, I love you, Mark. You know, I apologize in pre-advance, Mrs. Lucio. I'm sorry. I mean, I know you're remarried, but I drank a lot at your house, and I shouldn't have. You know what I mean? And I'm just telling on myself a little bit. You know what I mean? No disrespect. This is an honest program. You know, I had a lot of fun at your house, and I'd never met you before. I'm making amends. That's what I'm doing. You had a beautiful house over there. You have a beautiful son that I've known forever. And I'm so thrilled that he's sober, man. You know, because we're like, when we put one little bit in our body, we change. I can't explain why. It's because we have a disease. You know, and it takes us places that, you know, we hurt the ones that we love the most because they're the ones that are so vulnerable because they don't want us to hurt. They want to take care of us. You know, and my mom died, man. And I wasn't there to hold her hand like I should have. You know, so I carry that with me. I couldn't even go to her funeral. You know, so I just want to say I love you, Mom, okay? And I know your son loves you with all his heart, okay? And I'm going to leave the rest for Mark. I don't know how long I've been going. I can go a lot longer, you know what I mean? But I think Mark's got a tremendous story to tell. He's a miracle, man. Everybody that's sober in here is a miracle. You know, and my duty as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous is to carry this message in the world. Okay, when I say in the world, like I can go around places that other people can't go, and I can get people that some people that they can get that I can't get, and I go into the war zones because I have a higher power that's got me. You know what I mean? I know what will happen if I put one drop of alcohol or one drug. I'll be over. Thank you.
Let's give a rousing Tulare County welcome for our featured speaker, Mark.
Is that fair coaching me to the lesson? Take my time. I am Mark. I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Mark.
Oh, nice to be here. Nice to be anywhere. Nice to be amongst a lot of people that have helped me along the way in this journey that I never truly expected I'd be taken. What it was like, what happened, where we're at today, is a format that anybody leading or talking in a meeting talks about. And based on my experience, I come from a household of drinking and an environment of drinking. And what we did for a living in our family thing, there was a lot of drinking and deals were done over drinking, and I had a dad that drank. I'm not blaming my dad. Nobody has ever poured anything down my throat for me to put the blame on. But I think there is a sense of, you know, a biological part of this thing that certain people are born a certain way, and we take it to the limit, we overdo it, and you know, we wind up here, and I never expected to be here. It wasn't, I thought I was going to be given a business seminar or accepting some kind of award for helping people, but I'm here. And I'm very mindful that it is my daughter's birthday. It is January 10th. I'm very mindful that as this is going on in the town of Tulare, that there's a police officer out saving a life. There's somebody taking care of the elderly. There is, real heroes out there. And all we're called on to do when we get in this program, which the only requirement is a desire to stop drinking. And the only thing that we're required to do is take some sort of position to where you a coffee maker, a secretary, help out in the meetings, and then go on and share your story and help the alcoholic who's still suffering. And it goes back that, you know, obsessive compulsive personality, addictive personality in the true sense of the word. You get into high school and all the normal people do discover partying. Some of it do it to the level that we did it. And talk about Monty was calm tonight. You should have seen that guy on speed in 1983. he'd really get on a roll. This is real, like, tamed down. But I'm addictive in every way, in a lot of ways. I discovered in my probably in my teens that I have an anxiety disorder. I have depression. There was a 95-pound guy, about 5'2", my freshman year in high school, and I got a first period, and this guy's there, and then I got a second period, and this guy's there, and I come from St. Aloysius School, and there's only like 8 boys that graduated out of that class. And so, you know, we're getting thrown on a campus of 2,200 people. You know, I'm seeing my first black guy ever, seeing what the real world looks like. And then I got a third period, this guy's there, and pretty quick, I think they put the screw ups all like on the schedule, and we ended up, it was an icebreaker dance or whatever, and fate would have it that, you know, I asked the other guys, and it was me and Rusty and Mike and the crew, and then we brought Steve in and the other guy, the 95-pound guy, is in the room tonight. And we resembled, and I've said this, we resembled Motley Crue, only we didn't have the women, the looks, or the musical talent, or the money. But besides that, we were a lot like them. And I met this guy, and his name's David O. And he asked me at the end of that day, I remember, he goes, are you the Lucio that does the hey? That's my dad and my family. And he goes, I think my dad buys some hay from you guys. And we ended up the best of friends. And we went that icebreaker dance. I think we all got together and we had our first drinks. And we took him home to his religious mom and dad. And they weren't very happy at the condition he came home. And like we do, we all 5 got together and said, we're going to do it again next weekend, you know. And we continued that. That went on for years, man. That went on all through high school. That went on through well into our 20s. That went on through our marriages. That went on through. I ended up selling. Our senior trip, we went to Hawaii. And there you go, Monty. I like that. We went to Hawaii. Lucky kids that got to go to Hawaii. And we got back off that plane. And we're trying to figure our way out in life, what we're going to do. And got the call that David's dad passed away, and he was in his 40s, and he was in perfect shape, and David had to take over that dairy. I'm going to go back and forth here. He had to take over that dairy, and Dave and I would drink every day. You know, I'd go out after our work, and I'd go out, and we'd sit in his office, and Dave could drink unnatural, man. I mean, I could drink him, but he wouldn't be dry. I'd be buzzing after 4 or 5 beers. I could do 24, but he could do 24 and still be straight. And he's we were blowing those things, and you have a 3.8, and he was fine. And I'm going to jump back to how I got here, but one of the first miracles that happened to me was about a year ago. I'm at Rule 62, a meeting that some of us attend. On a Thursday night, and there's a guy looking at me in a funny way. I'm wondering what's he looking at. He keeps looking. And at the end of the meeting, he come up. He goes, "You don't know me?" And I recognize his voice, and it's my friend Dave's here. And Dave, there's no secret about it. He is an advanced stage liver. And I didn't recognize my best friend, man. I mean, that's what it does to us. And I went through years, and people go, you know, I didn't know, or, you know, I thought you were on the wagon, or you know, you're not drinking, or, and when you have a drinking problem, you're always on the wagon, you know? You're always on the wagon, unless you're just full blown. I mean, you're always on the wagon. I'll quit Monday, I'll quit that. And I went several years where I switched. You know, I switched from the alcohol, the, you know, things to sleep, abusing everything, cough syrup and stuff. And You know, when you have depression or anxiety, you have the right to do that, or poor me, or self-pity. I got 3 drunk drive-ins all in total, and I got 7, like, stints and, you know, evenings in jail where it was just like a public intoxication or whatever. And it's just like being in that Catholic church, you know, when you go to confession the first time and you know, the priest goes, you know, what'd you do? And, you know, I said a few swear words or smoked a cigarette or whatever you did. And they tell you to do 5 Hail Marys and some Glory Bees. And that's your first hustle. You go, you know, I could do that and I could get away with it. And, true story. And as long as you're getting away with it, or somebody's buying you out of it, or you didn't kill anybody, I knew the first time I got popped, and I was 16 years old, and they give me this, this questionnaire that they give you at whatever the hell the name of that recovery resources, you know, and it's like, okay, check, do you do this? Do you drink more than, yeah, I do. Think you might have a drinking problem. And I remember telling the guy, I go, I think I have a drinking addiction, but it's no problem. Like, I just got my driver's license. I just got my first kiss. I'm popular in school. This is not a problem. In other words, at one point, alcohol was a very good thing for me. It worked for a lot of years. And how we got, how like David and I and our friends got on the road. And, you know, you would think if he wasn't here to validate it, we'd be at the bar at midnight and be 18 beers in, and we would take off to Las Vegas in a car or San Francisco, or we would come to, and one time in Arizona, got chased by the Border Patrol and threw his lights on us and I go, should we outrun him or go to jail? He goes, hell, it's your call. And I go, we're going to outrun him, and we did it. And it was all innocent, and it was fun, and it worked, and you know, while all this is happening, you know, it's that what I do, I do in excess. And certain things, I mean, I love food, and I don't think I'm a food addict. I love other things. I'm not an addict to that. But when I pour alcohol in me, there's no telling when I'm going to end. It might stop at 4. I might not do it for a few days. I might get on a bender where it's 20 a day. I have no control over the next drink, unless I don't have the first one. And through years of hiding things and concealing things and you know, starting off the morning with, you know, it was my sister Debbie that discovered that I was on things and called me out, and I was in a bad marriage and I kind of got backed into rehab. I didn't want to go. I feel I have to make amends for that. I mean, when you're a guy like me and you have depression or you have addiction problems, everybody's patting you on the back like, oh, you're doing good, or, you know, you're doing great, Mark, or how's Mark's mood? And it's all about Mark, and it's all self-centered, and you know, your parents worry about your friends, and, you know, what about my sister that really played by the rules and didn't do anything wrong?
Yeah.
You know, what about those people? And that's the families of us that go out there, and they're actually doing the right thing when we're doing the wrong thing, but yet we get the attention. And that's why I find a common place in Alcoholics Anonymous, to where there's people that suffer or are afflicted by the same thing I have. And that's the sense of not just being able to quit or having to change my way of thinking through through substance. And I'm a blessed guy. The one thing I've learned in here that I didn't have, I thought I had it, but I didn't have it, was I've learned gratitude. I didn't have gratitude, because if somebody says, you're born in America, you got food in your stomach, you got a roof over your head, be grateful. I couldn't find it. If you just slap me in the face with it, I couldn't find gratitude. And I worked with a few different men in Alcoholics Anonymous. And after I got out of that 30-day rehab, I had no intentions on doing AA meetings. that was not going to be for me. I was just trying to separate myself from what I was doing to get well, to get back on track. And I came back, honestly, more screwed up than when I left. And so I got a meeting scheduled, and I found you guys, and it was a Tuesday night meeting, and Chris Kay was there, and where's that little leprechaun guy? And there he is right there. And he hands me a business card, and it said, Chris Kay, Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm like, what's this all about? And what Chris did for me in the beginning was he took me, he goes, all right, I'm going to take you by the hand, and we're going to go to Starbucks, and I'm going to take you to the Monday night deal, and I'm going to take you to Tuesday night, and he got me in a schedule of going to meetings.
Yeah.
And but the only thing with Chris, man, we were late to every meeting, man. And then I had to cover for the guy because he had quit his job but didn't tell Kim about it, and he's hanging out with me. He goes, well, I'm playing hooky, Mark, and somebody asked me how those meetings went. Somebody asked me how those meetings went in the beginning. I go, man, there's so many Packer fans there, it makes me sick. You know, and there was Kaylee, and there was Dora, and then there was Catherine, and there was Kim, and too much Packers, but I found my common people, and a few men have worked with me from day one. You know, Chris worked with me, and my first got shot was there's a Sunday morning group, and Spartan Bob's part of that group. Mike Kelly's part of that group. There's a few of us that are part of that group, and you know, we had sports in common, and we talked, and there was a men's retreat, and I had about, you know, I don't know, 20 days sober out of that rehab, and David Grassel and Chris, you know, you have to kind of vouch for a guy to go. They go, hey, you want to go on this men's retreat? I go, I'd like to do that, be in a men's situation where around the campfires. And we all go to David Grassel's, and we get there, and we're loading up, and there's a guy halfway recognized, and it's Brad W. back there. And he goes, don't I know you? I go, I think I seen you in Sunday morning meeting. And Brad became my rock for 1 year. We went to the Tuesday morning, Tuesday evening meeting. Catherine and Dave were a big part of that meeting. And we would go to Sizzler. And man, I hate Sizzler, Brad. I can't eat. Still can't eat there. And we would go there. And I'd be feeling so sorry for myself that particular day. And Brad told me a story one time. I mean, we got very close. And on a Halloween, and Brad was a very young kid, and he remembers that he lost his dad in a car wreck, and he was in that car. And Brad was raised by his mother, and I go, what the hell? And that was my first lesson, like, what the hell am I crying about here, you know? Why am I crying when he's been through that, and he has such a great personality? And Brad had a six-figure job that he had several drunk drive-ins that he shared his story to me, that he went to a temp agency just so he could try to quit couch surfing. He has a 24-year-old guy ordering him around like a dictator. He goes, I had to swallow my pride to get where I'm at. And Brad's all the way back in home ownership. Him and Monica have a great relationship. I'm staring here at David B., who's done some work with me. David's a very busy guy and his thing, but we got together. He took me on for a while. David B. has his own business and computers, and we all know, you know, in a meeting about Alcoholics Anonymous, he lived under a bridge. He has an amazing story. Domingo and Mandy took me by the hand the first Tuesday night I was there and made me feel welcome. They came and said, welcome, Mark. And the list goes on of the people that have helped me. Bob and Tommy, they allow me in the sports conversations and made me feel good, you know, about that. I got to meet women that were real women, that women that might have been out there that became good people. It gave me faith in women. I met Rayanne, and I saw the relationship with her and her husband David, and he's a normal guy, non-alcoholic, and how they intermingle. And that gave me hope. That gave me hope that relationships could happen for me, you know. So I'm going through a series of men I'm working with, and There's another, this is recorded, I shouldn't say, there's another Mike Kay in the group, and sometimes he's a grumpy Mike Kay, but he worked with me for a while, and I love that guy, and he would tell me what I needed to hear, but I didn't like it. And I remember on a Sunday night, you know, I'm in an empty house because my wife had left me 7 months sober, and it was a bad marriage, and it needed to end, but it ended. And I remember this particular night, Sunday night football was on. I have an empty home, and I was walking around very lonely in my home and climbing the walls. And a few months prior, my friend Tom and I, we had got on these dating sites, you know, just for, you know, we'd go to Chili's afterwards and we're making our profiles. And I told Mike, I go, Mike, I need help. I go, I'm lonely. I'm crying. I'm hurting. I'm depressed. I'm this. I'm that. He told me to get the hell away from his house until I came to him with a gratitude list. And I went home, I go, grateful about what? And my sister always tells me, one of my sisters, Debbie, you know, our parents are still alive. You know, you got this, you have that, and you have a lot to be always trying to put the... And so I wrote a gratitude list. I go, like, where should I start? He goes, well, start with sheets on your bed. Yeah. And that was a foreign concept to me because I wasn't like Dave. I wasn't under the bridge. And I did. I wrote it down. Sheets on bed, still roof overhead, got some friends, you know, got some people. And I'll be damned. I don't write that gratitude list. I get back then on a futon in my fourth bedroom, crash out, and I'm going to sleep on a Sunday night, and it's getting about 11 o'clock. And I get a text from somebody, a message on that dating site two months prior, and, hey, how's it going? And it's my fiancée, Heather. And I go, well, who's this? And she goes, well, I've been not active on the sites, but I just went through the email, and I saw that, thought, you know, so I guess she was bored on a Sunday night, too. And we ended up talking till like 2 or 3 in the morning, and we've been talking ever since, you know. And that's the way AA works. Right? Like right when you least expect it, the miracle happens. I don't do anything here perfectly. I do a lot of things wrong, and I repeat my wrongness. But the one thing I've done here is I've always extended my hand to the newcomer. And I'm one of those guys that, you know, the guys should work with the guys, the women should work with women, and... You know, Catherine Rand and several of our sponsors, other young people, and they're good. And if I wanted my daughter in here, you know, I would want them around people like them that do things right. And Mandy works with women. You know, we help each other. I was so judgmental when I came in, so judgmental. I would see the same person taking a newcomer chip, you know. And I go, man, why the hell are they doing that? I mean, why do they keep taking a newcomer chip? Why are they, you know, repeat offenders? And I have respect for those people today because as long as you have a desire to quit drinking and you keep coming back, you always have a shot here. And you don't know if you're going to get it on your first try or your 42nd try or whatever. And then I would look at a 30-year-old guy. I would look at a 30-year-old guy and I would say, man, he had a lot more in the tank. He's quitting too soon. What the hell is he doing here? He doesn't even have a drunk driving. And now I look at these guys with the utmost respect that they can live a life without drinking, you know, and they could go from 30 to a lifetime and not live a life dominated by alcohol and drugs. And my hat's off to them. So my things have changed. When I came in here and I get on a good run and things were going great, you know, I thought I knew all the answers. I'd play doctor. Hey, maybe you should get off your depression medication. Maybe you should leave your wife. Maybe, you know, I knew it all. And really, the longer I'm here, I don't know anything at all. I mean, I really don't. I'm becoming further and further from being educated in this thing. Then sometimes I'm like a newcomer. We're at a meeting last night, Rule 62, and there's one of those, you know, a couple of my buddies, Roland and Audrin, were there, and it's become kind of like a men's meeting, and it's down to 12, 15 people, and it's like there used to be a lot of life to that meeting, and it's like, oh, man, this is kind of sad that it's not jovial. And we had a really weird secretary. He didn't know how to do it. He was there on a card, but we had a great. He was there on a card, and somebody put him in an awkward position. But I heard Audrin tell a story last night, how his brother, with 48 years sober, was able to talk to him before he died and went in that coma, and he died sober, and he was able to talk to his brother. You know, and Audrin's from Ireland. And he tells the stories of how he got here. And I go, man, what a beautiful story. And these guys with 30 years that, you know, there's a big argument in the book of whether you're in recovery or you're recovered based on your spiritual condition. I always look at myself as I'm recovering because, you know, I'm suspect to a lot of changes in the way I think and the way I act out or whatever. But I'd say a guy with 30, 31 years, I'd say he's probably still in recovery because they still need the meetings. I mean, these people have a life and they have a place to go, but they're still here giving back, doing the 12th step, giving freely to us what was given to them. And I've had a life full of miracles, and it's the David B's. It's the Brads, it's David G's and the Chris K's, and lately it's my guy Danny. Yeah, he's been there for me, and he's taking it slow with me. He's having patience with me, and I have these character defects where I butt in or I talk too fast, and I need to calm down or I need to. And he's guiding me along like a guy should, and I'm getting so much love and information from this guy that. It's unbelievable. And we've had a lot on our plate the last year, me personal, but when I get in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, we're all going through it. And I don't like to look at another guy's misfortune as a reason why I should be thankful. Like, well, that guy's paralyzed from the neck down. I should be grateful because I can walk. When my nature makes me depressed because the guy's paralyzed, you know? So you got to customize your program here. If you're new, customize it. I mean, maybe it's 3 or 4 meetings a week. Maybe it's working with others. Maybe it's making coffee. Maybe it's whatever you do. But customize it what works, and nobody does the thing the same. I was telling my mother, I've been traveling to Yuma, Arizona. I had my best Alcoholics Anonymous, you could have called it like an NA meeting. It was kind of. I was in Yuma, Arizona, and I'm in a gas station pulling in there at 11 o'clock at night called Speedway. And it's not on the best side of town or the worst, but it's a. And there was a gal in there, and she goes, oh, my old man's going to kick my ass because she had some pastries and, you know, speed drinks, whatever the hell they're called. And she goes, man, I didn't have enough money, you know, and he's going to whip my ass and all that. And yeah, I think she was $2 short, and I covered that. I go, where's your old man? She goes, he's around the corner on that pole. And I went and talked to her and the old man. We had an hour-long conversation when I'm pulling in there. And I go, man, what put you here? And they said it was, you know, methamphetamine. That's another meeting, but they go, and what? How in the hell can you relate to that? I can relate in a huge way. I go, because if I was not enabled and people didn't cover my ass, I'd be right where you're at right there. But, I had people like my sister, my dad, my mom, I covered for me over a lifetime, you know. And I'm trying to own up. I'm trying to do that tense out. I try to do that daily inventory of where I'm going wrong and where I'm falling short. And it's been an interesting ride in here. It's been an unbelievable ride. You know, I got to rehab. I showed up there in extremely bad shape. You know, went to the ER deal and did a lot going there. And I, you know, had a cousin drive me there. And I had West Nile virus in 2014, so I was in the hospital 8 days. And when I woke up and I came to in that room. Hey, I go, man, the West Nile came back, and then I saw the big book sitting on the deal, and I go, shit, they got me here, you know? And then they started doing things like, all right, you know, you got to get up. H and I, Cocaine Anonymous is in the house. I go, cocaine's not my problem. They go, just make believe it's your problem and replace it for whatever it is. So we got these 12-steppers coming in here doing H&I work, and you know, and I was mouthing off to, because I don't feel very good, you know. And I took my 24-hour shift in a room about half the size of this room, and there was couches and TVs and little kitchenette, and you know, there's about 20 of us on the hospital floor. That was the inpatient part of it, the detox part of it. And believe me, we all had trash cans and blankets, and were shivering on the couch, and all of us were very near a restroom to go take that 24-hour chip. That was the hardest chip I ever took. My one-year chip was hard to take. I was depressed on my 1 year. I reached out to people on my 1 year. I go, I'm not supposed to be feeling like this at 1 year. I'm not supposed to be feeling like this at 4 years. I mean, when does it, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, right? I mean, that's what they tell us in this program. But I got the blessings of family. I got a father that loves me. I got a sister that I didn't even know about until I was 21. I went to school with her. She's sitting right back there, Jovina. Debbie and I, we accept her and love her as our sister, and that was a surprise to me. I found that out in a bar one night when I was 21, that somebody I went to school with and knew was my sister, you know. I got my other sister, Debbie, that's covered a lifetime for me. When she was doing the right things and I was doing the wrong things, I got the attention. I didn't deserve that attention, you know, but they love me in spite of who I am. I could sit here and tell you I got my shit together in that 4+ years in here, because it was August 9th of 2015. I was in a place called Cottage Hospital. I like to say, man, Mark, I've came this far and you're this far and you're doing good. I got Heather back there to vouch that I have freaking meltdowns where I'm crying and I'm shaking, and she's rubbing my back telling me it's going to be okay. You're going to be okay. And she's like a woman on a program, but she never had a drinking or a drug problem, you know, but it's like she's worked the 12 steps, and these are the God shots I get. You know, it's people I've met in these rooms that made me go another day. It's like, well, and I couldn't go without this thing. Without, let's talk about Aloha again. I get my first Tuesday night meeting. That was the one where I met Domingo and I met the Packer fans, and I backed into Nora's car, and of course Anita's like that, you know. I'm gonna kick your ass, and Nora goes, "Oh, don't worry, man. As long as you come back, you don't have to pay." You know, yeah, people remember. I want to get the hell out of there so bad. I backed into her car, and I go back to that. I go back to that first meeting, and the hands that were reached out to me, and I didn't deserve it, you know, and the miracles, and it would be, you know, in that meeting, there's a dude with dyed blonde hair and a Hawaiian shirt, you know, and I'm sizing him up, you know. I go, man, who in the hell is this guy? He looks like a shoe salesman, you know. That maybe he just spilt a glass of wine on his lap and his wife bitched him into coming to AA, you know. And after a few meetings, I figured out he really didn't like his wife, and then and I really had nowhere to go, and we started dining every night together, and he gave me experience, strength, and hope. He told me where he'd been, man. The guy'd been homeless in 10 states. He'd been in every kind of, almost died of pancreatitis, kicked out of the military, slept in parks, slept in newspaper stand. And that's when I quit judging who's here. You know, you don't know, Bo calls them Hoosier because they're both from Indiana, but you don't know who you're looking at in these rooms. You don't know who you're looking at. You have no idea who you're looking at. That guy might have his crap together. He might be the attorney. He might be the guy hurting in the room tonight the most. You might have a guy that looks like a little worse for wear. He has more shit going on than me as far as program. So you don't know what you're looking at, and it's going to fool you if you think for 5 minutes that that you think you know who's here, you better. I got my wallet lifted in a meeting. There was five people that could have did it, and they were all newcomer people. I haven't seen them since. That could have ran me out of that meeting, but I kept coming back. I'm not going to let them. I've grown up in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I go. You know, principles before personalities. So I look at the principles of this place. I look at your examples of your miracles, of how you turned your life around. That gives me hope to go another day. You know, I want to be like my sisters. They don't have drinking problems. I want to be like people that don't have a drinking problem. And I don't have to have a drinking problem if I don't take that first drink. It's not a problem anymore, right? I mean, I'm not going to wind up... I'm not going to wind up passed out. I'm not. David and I have had guns. I shouldn't say it for a moment. We've had guns go ahead. We've been shot at. We've been in really weird spots, you know, and we survived. And David's in real bad need of a liver, and we got to pray for him to get that. We have a good friend in the program. We all know Mitch. And he was days from, you know, not getting a liver. And That guy looks better than, you know, a lot of us. Man, he's in good shape, and it's all because of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that he got that liver. And if you're new, what I would do when I didn't have somebody at home, I didn't have home-cooked meals. Heather cooks good, so after me, I go home, I'm looking forward to eating, you know. So it's like a good life. It's a house. There's a smell of food, and there's noise in there. And we watch my 600-pound life, and we do boring shit, and we're watching the iPad. And although we have a 60-inch TV, we're watching 48 hours on the iPad. And then on a real freaking wild night, we'll go sneak to Jack in the Box and get a milkshake, you know. And I'm blessed, like Jimmy B says, I'm blessed for my boring social life. I'm blessed to go home, take off my clothes, put on the iPad, and I don't have to worry about checking my car that I hit somebody that night. Or I'm a blackout guy. Why, Mark, why? Why can't you just have two or three? Why can't you? And I feel like saying, well, why can't you go to Las Vegas with $1 in your pocket? Because it ain't no fun. It's no fun for a guy like me. And I'm sitting here hypocrite as hell because I shove tobacco down my mouth. I haven't learned a lot of good things I need to learn, but I still extend my hand to the members of Alcoholics Anonymous. I make you feel welcome, and I think most people, some people don't like me here, some people love me or like me, but all of you guys tolerate me. Everybody tolerates me. And that's what's really cool about this place. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. And I don't want to drink. I don't want to wake up with that taste in my mouth. I don't want to do what people do. I don't want to have to come in here at 65, with a liver problem or wiping somebody out and a DUI. I want to grow with you guys. I want to grow so I can be a better husband, a better friend, a better son, a better brother, a better person, a better business guy. You know, my sister would always ask me, you know, when are you going to engage again? I didn't want to engage because I'm full of fear. I'm full of fear. You guys are teaching me the courage to face it one day at a time. One day at a time. And to say it sounds so corny that, you know, do you have a roof over your head? Yep, check. Has anybody given you a diagnosis of anything? But no. Then you're okay in the moment. So I'm okay in this moment as I speak to you in a very unimportant meeting when things are really going on. There's car accidents out there. There's people saving lives. There's heroes out there. I'm a guy speaking to 60 alcoholics in a room that maybe somebody gets something out of it or somebody don't. But the miracles, yeah, you cannot tell me there is not a God when I've seen what I've seen in these rooms. It's like unbelievable. And you've got to be a member here and be afflicted with what we have to really feel it and understand it. I don't think he's going to get mad at me saying this. My man here, Domingo, he had a suicide attempt and he failed and he missed. And now he has a beautiful daughter, beautiful relationship, and he's the most grateful guy I know. You know, I had the honor of meeting the Dannys. I had the honor of meeting the David B's and the Catherines that came in here losing their hair sick and having other disorders and ran the disorders and the chaos. And they have normal marriages. They have normal relationships. They go home and they're good people. You know, they're not liars. They're good to their husbands. They're good to their wives. People always ask about, oh, is there a lot of effing around there? And I go, not really. Not what I see. I see people living pretty, at least the groups I'm in, I see people living very good, you know, for the most part. At least the people that stay, you know, the people that stay. I'm so grateful. Just so grateful for what you guys give me. And where I fall short, you guys pick it up for me, you know. Where I'm weak, you guys are strong. And I think in some instances where, you know, vice versa, you know, that I got some strong points. I'm not afraid to open my mouth and shake a hand. And a lot of people run in the corner and shy about being there. I say, hey, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're a woman or a young woman, hey, there's Mandy right there. And there's Catherine right there. There's Rayanne right there. And there's Sherry right there. And they're good women. That's where I'd want my daughter to be. There's Jody right there. I want my daughter with these people, you know. There's Kim right there. She's battled cancer and won. I saw her in Rule 62 meeting where she didn't know she's going to live, and her and Chris scared shitless, and she can't even talk, and she has a trait going on, but yet she has an energy to go meet him, Alcoholics Anonymous, and that is the message I get here. That's what gives me hope to come here, and I can name them, and they're going on, you know, everywhere tonight. You know, it's 9 o'clock on a Friday night, and there's meetings everywhere. There's speaker meetings. I went to these speaker meetings when I was in that rehab. A speaker meeting, well, I guess it sounds good because I could bolt during the break and go to Panera Express to eat some food because I don't like the hospital food at the rehab. So this is pretty cool to go to a speaker meeting, although I didn't hear a damn thing what you guys were saying. But something brought me back to you like a magnet. Something brought me back to the Audrins. There was a guy named Phil. I was in rehab. His name was Phil. And right when I got out of that detox, we go to the outpatient program of Alcoholics Anonymous. A guy named Phil is 95 years old, has 59, 60 years sobriety. And they go, Mark, tonight we're going to the, today we're going to the cancer ward. We're going to the cancer ward. I can't go to the cancer ward because, see, it's all about me and me being sent off to the rehab. But my dad was getting tested for lung cancer, but they were 99% sure he had. And my sister's over there manning that because I'm not man enough to do it, right? Because I'm addicted. So she's taking him to USC while I'm at the rehab taking care of this. I go, I'm going to lose it if I go to the cancer ward for a meeting. They go, you have to go, or we're going to kick you out of this place, and insurance isn't going to pay. So I'm depressed. I'm in the cancer ward. You know, I'm thinking about my dad at this time. I'm coming to. And there's a dude named Phil, and he's 95, and he's cocky. And he's flipping this, like, 60-year coin at me, like, taunting me with it, you know. And I did those men's stag meetings, you know, in that cancer center. I did them 2 days a week. We did, and Phil was there every time, man. And we're in this horseshoe, and Phil's looking at me. I was like, I mean, he's doing that crap with his coin. And, you know, and so on the last day, he goes, you plan on going to AA? And I go, I don't know. I don't know where I'm going from here. I know I'm in deep shit when I get home. I got a marriage that probably isn't going to work. I got problems at work that I'm part of making a mess of. And I got all this crap. I don't know what I'm doing, Phil. He goes, well, I heard you talk a couple times. He goes, but you don't talk much. He goes, I got a couple words of advice for you. I go, yeah. He goes, if your kid has a little league game, he goes, you go to the meeting. If you got an anniversary with your wife, you go to the meeting. I go, none of this is going to fly. You know, if your dad has a birthday, you go to the meeting. I go, none of this is going to fly. You're in a different world than me. And I go, why is that, Phil? Why are you saying that? He goes, because if you don't stay close to the groups and maintain not taking a drink, you're not going to have anything. You're not going to have a family. You're not going to have a kid. You're not going to have a wife. You're not going to have a father, mother to allow you around. You're not going to have a sister. You're not going to have anything. And he's flipping that coin, right? He goes, a guy like you, he goes, Mark, do you have any good suits? Like, I got a few. Why are you asking? He goes, I'm asking because if you stay around Alcoholics Anonymous, he goes, and you decide to drink, they're going to have to bury you in one. And if you stay around long enough, you're going to bury a lot of friends. Dead end, sober and drunk. That resonated with me, what Phil told me that night, you know. I went away and things are good, you know, and we're having a barbecue at my dad's and my sister Debbie's, and we're close to David Cardoza, Where are you, David? You still back there? David's right there. I've known him my whole life. I love David. And we're having a barbecue, and I hear Debbie screaming. We're in the back. I heard my sister screaming, and David hit the ground like a rock, and David had a massive heart attack at my dad's house. And Debbie was upset because she loves Dave. You know, he's part of our family. And the first thing I knew what to do was to call Domingo, and him and Mandy were down there, and we were able to be there for David. And we were able to be around his bed. We were able to be at Ram when she had a bad thing around the bedside. That's what we do for each other. You know, we come as a group and we take our meeting to that spot. You know, we give them what we have. I've had blessings. I've been able to be there for a few of you guys, and you guys have been there for me. I'm going to end with this. When I went to that rehab, I didn't plan on coming to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. They gave me enough donuts and they gave me enough time at that place. I heard too many of your stories that when I got home, I just didn't feel right. I went on a road trip with Heather to Minneapolis, Minnesota, watched the Vikings win a Monday night game. We're driving back. I had been about a week without a meeting, and I was edgy. She goes, let me pull up a meeting list on, I'll tell you this, Anna Gasha. I pull up a meeting list on the phone. Well, there's one over here in Hayes, Kansas. You know, Hayes, Kansas, I'll tell you, they call it 5 hours from nowhere. So you're out of Kansas City, you're on your way to Colorado, and we're eating at this burger place, and it's a Freddy's, a really cool place. We're eating there, and I got Lano Club, and there's 28 rednecks in there. They all look like Gary Toon. 28 Gary Toons. And I go, man, if I had to get sober in Hayes, Kansas, I would never make it in Hayes, Kansas, because I don't relate to Hayes, Kansas AA. And they go, what are you doing? Can they sell my place? I go, what are you doing in California? I go, well, I'm an actor. I'm gay. I serve. Can I do all that? I go, not really. I just do something as boring as you guys do, you know, an agriculture type thing. As I'm driving away, I go, I'll be damned. Bob and I's friend, Dr. Charles, is from Hayes, Kansas. And I go, I was just in the place where a good friend of mine got sober, and I'm out in the middle of nowhere. 2019, I wanted to improve my AA program a little bit. What can I do to improve my AA program? I quit swearing in meetings. I quit using the F word in meetings. And the reason why is because if I had a young friend or my daughter or a niece, or I wouldn't want them to hear a middle-aged man dropping the F-bomb like I used to my first 3 years of sobriety. So it's just a little habit thing. I'll swear right when I leave this room. At about 2:30 when that football game's going on tomorrow, I'll really be swearing. But I chose not to swear. I chose not to swear in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous because I want to set an example for the newcomer. I want to be the best guy I could be for the young guy that's looking for help in the rooms of AA. I have a lethal problem. I got something that's out there trying to kill me. If I stop by 7-Eleven, it's all there. You know, cigarettes are there. The beer's there. You get fake speed. You could get, you know, everything in a 7-Eleven that gets you going back right out there. I don't want to drink a beer. I don't want to do that stuff. But I do like free will. I like the fact that it's there, and I could pass that bill, and I have a choice today. I have a choice of what I do, what I say most of the time. I've met you. I love you guys. Thank you for being there for me. I need you a hell of a lot more than you need me. Believe that. I'm going to keep coming back. Thanks for hosting me tonight, Rick. I got 4 or 5 months. I'm doing the Wednesday night deal. So if you didn't like what you heard tonight, stay away from that meeting. Good night.